Blog Talk Radio.
This is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida.
To their loved ones,
it was so much taken from the woman, and so I said this book is so appropriately named Stolen Woman. All of this happened to her prior to where we're at now. Where we're now, we're in chapter 2. And I'm not going to do the whole book, you guys, but I want to get enough of it so that when we, wherever we finish in this book, we have a sense of that aha moment comes about and we can say, okay, now I know why I'm like this or why she acts like that. Okay, we talked about the last thing we did a story. It was called for chapter 2, Captive to the Stereotype. And she talked about a situation where she was on her way to her sister-in-law's wedding, and she was getting ready to get on the elevator, or she got off the elevator, and she had this beautiful dress on, and two guys saw her and asked her, was she for $100, or made the comment, and it really hurt her feelings. And I think this happened to Dr. Gale. But how, even now, how things still bother us, even though we don't act like it, we're thinking that society is beyond that, and we find out that really society is not, hasn't gone anywhere. Okay, I think we stopped on, I think we stopped on where it says the permissive stereotypes. Now, this is chapter 2. The stereotype of the promiscuous black woman persists whether we are standing at a bus stop with our children on our way to church dressed in Sunday best, studying in the library for class, sitting in a business suit testifying before a congressional committee, or standing in a hotel lobby. Age, dress, appearance, and even economic status have much less to do with our image than do race and gender. Not long ago, I read an article about the handsome white actor on one of the hottest television series. He was quoted saying that his black girlfriend was the sexiest woman that I've ever met. For a brief moment, I hoped that sis would be described as intelligent, witty, charming, interesting, or even warm and personable. Anything but sexy. He may indeed have described her other attributes, but these were the only words that found their way into the article. When I read that Hugh Grant had been arrested with Devine Brown for sexual misconduct on the side street in Hollywood, something told me that she was black, and she was. The media just loved the story of the curious English gentleman with the tempting she-devil and labeled him a bad boy, while they wondered why he would cheat on his beautiful white girlfriend. No one questioned why Devine Brown was engaging in prostitution. It seemed more understandable that she should have chosen that profession than that he should have chosen her over his mate. I was shocked at how blatantly the blockbuster movie Independence Day confirmed the stereotype. The black heroine who was sleeping with the character played by Will Smith was a striptease dancer, a profession that discouraged Will Smith from marrying her. He was trying to get into flight school, and a white buddy warned that he would never be accepted with a stripper as a wife. It was only the threat of the world annihilation that made him. Do the right thing and marry her. Why couldn't a female character have been a teacher or a doctor who was married? What purpose was served by having her riff and gyrate half-naked in a scene or two except to make subtle statement about the sexuality and acceptability of a black woman? It's little wonder that some black women become righteously indignant at even the slightest suggestion that they are available. It's not a compliment to be thought of as a promiscuous or impulsive. you can take only so many demeaning incidents before you become like Sapphire, a black female character on the infamous television program Amos and Andy. And it was telecast from 1951 to 1953. Sapphire was known for her ability to dominate poor, defenseless men. A head gyrating sister who gets people told in the wink of an eye and believes she has a good defense. If you respond in a vulnerable way, people might hurt you more. Countering this negative stereotype is also hard on our partners. If we always have to be defended or protected against the tide of assumptions, the underlying message is that we shouldn't be left alone and we can't be taken anywhere. Who knows when you might lose control of yourself and start seducing innocent bystanders? If you have no one to protect and stand up for you, if you're always fighting for yourself, your esteem can be eroded very quickly. But self-reliance was and is the key to survival. Just as permissive stereotype has refused to die, so has the stereotypical personality styles that the slaves and their descendants adopted to help them cope with the pressures they faced. These behaviors have become well established for several centuries, many because women have rarely had the opportunity to behave in the ways others than what expected of them, at least in public. To the larger society, these personality styles typify the black woman, and unfortunately some black women concur, confusing stereotypes with role models to emulate. So, when you talk about stereotype, it's the way society sees you. It's not how you really are, but it's the way society has been able to envision you. And when you become stereotyped to the point where you're fast, loose, and easy, society picks that up. Society allows it to be in place, and that's how others think of you. Go back to the example I was talking about when I went to this hair beauty supply store. This was in Baton Rouge. Perfect example of how you're in a black neighborhood. I'm shopping there, and you're watching me. Why, if you don't trust me, why would you put your stores in my neighborhood if you have to watch me? I wouldn't do it. I would put my stores where I know I'm confident in the people that come in and out of there, my customers, my neighbors, the community, that they come in the store, buy what they need to buy, and move on. They're not going to come in to steal from me. That's what I'm saying. And believe it or not, see, what we're not understanding is what America has done to us as a people, first and foremost. They have basically put us in a box. And any culture, any person, any other nationality opens up that box. Before you open up that box, the white folks have already told you what's in it. They described it, how it's shaped, what it can do, what it can't do, how it sounds. They've already described it for you. So when that box is given over to that other culture or that other race of people, they already know when they open up that box what's in it because someone has already pushed it in their head how they are. And that's how it is with the African-American woman. Down through the years, we're fast, we're loose, we're easy. You know, we're not respected. We're sexual beings, quote unquote. So any time that you approach us, you need to have either a hard on, and it goes both ways, or you need to have your nipples hard. I'm being honest with you, because that's how we allowed society, or we had no control over it. Society has allowed that picture of us to be formed, and when it was formulated, that's how people see us. You walk past somebody and, oh my God, I feel the heat of the black woman. You know, she's ready to open up her legs to me. You know, just like one of the scenes in here, she's squatting down trying to get her dress out the way while she picked cotton, and the illusion that she wants to be taken right there in the field comes to mind. And that's what they want to think about us, but that's definitely not how we are. And I thank God that we're not all like that. There's nothing wrong with being sexual, but being sexual to the person you love, not to just any stranger, not to any white man, should you be available to sleep with him no matter what he does. And it's crazy. And then, and that's why I get so angry with our males calling us bitches and hoes and all this, when we had to listen to that. Our ancestors, their ancestors, had to hear that all the time. No kind of respect for us. None whatsoever. And we come up, we go in this world, and they feel the same way. They just reiterate what has been taught down through the years. And that kills me. Okay. This next part is called the Mammy. Al Jolson sang about her, and her smiling face has been on the pancake boxes for generations. And you know, Aunt Jemima is that the lady that he's talking about. In the myth of the Superwoman, Michelle Wallace described her as the personified ideal slave and the ideal woman. Mammy was characterized as an obese, domesticated, asexual house slave with the world of wisdom and patience of Job, a heart of gold, and the willingness to breastfeed the world. Carol West, a psychic researcher who studies the effects of stereotypes on black women, described the Mammy as a dark complexion woman with African features. The Mammy characterized a moral black slave who had a staunch sense of right and wrong. She was a good woman because of sacrificing when it came to the well-being of white families, especially the children, who were often raised. But of her good behavior, she had little reason to feel bad about her role as caretaker. There were advantages and disadvantages of taking on the Mammy role. The Mammy had greater mobility and access to travel because she was considered to be trustworthy and a mature person. She often chaperoned children in their journeys to other cities and plantations. Most important, the Mammy was invested in her role as a slave and was not interested in freedom. Consequently, because she had access to the house, she was not a threat and could often gain inside information about the business or decisions of the slave owners regarding other slaves. Giving her wisdom, she was often asked to make decisions about the lives of others. And because she was considered asexual and was usually overweight, she was not a risk of sexual abuse to the same extent as was other slave women. On the other hand, a Mammy had no life or other commitments to a family of her own, or so it had to appear. Her priority had to be the family that she served. She was a caregiver whose own needs were often overlooked. Her physical appearance and demeanor usually suggested that she had no vanity and was unconcerned about her body image or her health. The Mammy was such an acceptable image, it's part of American culture that Hattie McDaniel was awarded an Academy Award for her performance as Mammy in the movie epic Gone with the Wind. Isn't that something? Apparently, this was an image that America could embrace. She could still see the remnants of those mammies in popular television personalities who are characterized by their largeness, their largest, and friendly personalities. They, too, emulate the stereotype of a selfless caretaker. Women who characterize the mammy may, however, have an unhealthy lifestyle of overeating, along with little exercise as a method of coping with the stress of poverty and the feeling of being unloved. Man, we're going to take a break, you guys, and we'll be back with more Through the Eyes of the Black Woman.
Every beat of my heart, there's a beat for you. there's a beat for you.
Alright, you guys, we are back on Through the Eyes of the Black Woman on the Say Your Peace Radio Network here. We have a caller on the line on 202. Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Hi, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
Okay. Did you have a question?
Oh, I had a comment.
Okay, go ahead. I'm listening.
Well, you said the problem with sisters is sexuality, right?
Yes.
Claiming this. I don't think that's the problem.
Okay, what's the problem with sisters?
Femininity. Lacking femininity.
Okay. Explain yourself.
Well, that's what sisters are losing on. The other women, femininity. They lack femininity. That's the number one complaint from black men.
Okay. Do you understand what we were talking about in this book and why it's like that now? Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about why it's like that to this day.
Why is it?
It's because it goes back to slavery, and this is what this is talking about. Stolen women. You think of the title Stolen Women, and it says reclaiming our sexuality, taking back our lives. Because according to slavery, the first thing, and you probably didn't hear part one of the book, the first thing an African-American female slave was introduced when she came to this world, this new land, quote unquote, she was raped. Open Africa, if you know the story about the heritage and the rituals over in Africa, women walked around. They didn't show their bottoms, but they showed their tops, which means they showed their breasts. Their breasts was a form of life. That was a symbol of life over there. When they came to this land, Western missionaries told them how nasty or how they were not supposed to be this way, but they've been taught the way that their bodies were sacred, despite them showing them out. The men over there didn't see them as sexual beings. They didn't become sexual beings till they came to America, when the white slave master raped them from the ages of even before they had their menstruation. There was a physician that made a statement that we were fast, loose, and easy. We didn't know what that was, but that's what they were labeled. So every man thought it was all right to have sex with women who really didn't want to have sex with them. That was a label the white man's, white masters, slave masters, gave them. And the problem is, it's saying reclaiming our sexuality, taking back our lives, because this is what has been instilled in them and who they were. So that's what the book is about, stolen women, taking away from them, and now it's time to reclaim it. You understand what I just said?
Yeah, I understand.
Now, do you understand why we say that? And it's not femininity. You take a culture, you take a whole people out of their element, and you snatch them and you put them in another whole element. They didn't speak English. They only knew their own language. They knew what they were taught in their land when it came to rituals of woman and how she was supposed to present herself. When she came over here, all of that was taken away from her. They were punished if they even practiced any of their rituals. All they became was, they raised the white kids, they had babies for the slave masters. Not only did they have babies for the slave masters, they would have babies for their kids, their males, the sons in the family. They did this, and they were sex. It was sex. Everything was sex to them. And it was a way of overpowering and showing who is in control. So they used sex as a way to keep the women in their places, because actually we were property. We weren't human beings to them. We were property. So they could do what they want to.
Here's the problem I have. I'm not trying to start an argument, because I respect the fact you researched this topic. But me being 47 years of age, black man, I remember how sisters were in the 70s, and how my aunts were, and how my friends and mothers were back in the early 70s, how that generation was. I actually remember it vividly. And black women were respectful, they were courteous, very proper, and they were virtuous. I remember it as a kid. My aunts, they used to wear hats, and they dressed modestly, they didn't curse, they didn't even chew bubble gum. It was considered unladylike. And a lot of sisters didn't even wear makeup back then. And I remember this as a kid growing up, how a lot of sisters were. And so you're going back to slavery. I understand you going back, but I remember how it was in the 70s, and how respectful and how sisters were. I vividly remember how they used to be.
Okay.
And so I can't go back to where you're at, because to me, none of us were slaves now in this country. Most of us were not born after, we were born here. So I can't connect it back, that part of it, because I remember how sisters were. I remember the generation where they wore afros, where they wore dashikis. Sisters were positive, helpful.
Okay.
And I just can't connect the dots where you're going. I just cannot make that leap.
And that's understandable. You're a male.
Yeah.
This is called stolen women. So you wouldn't understand. I'm glad you said that, and I really am. You're only
I just gotta understand. I don't believe it.
Okay, well that's what I'm saying. You have a right to that. You have a right to that because you are just what you are, a male. So you have a right to that. You wouldn't understand it. Slavery is the thing is, if you understand, because you're a male, you wouldn't see what the woman went through, and you didn't hear the first part of the book. So,
we went through the same things you went through.
No,
black men were slaves,
sir,
too, okay?
Sir,
we were there with you, okay? Trust me, we were there.
Let's talk about, hold up, now that you want to say that, let's talk about the part of the book which you missed. Let me let you hear this. Let me do this. The males would not, this is what the males would do. They were not considered husband and wife. So what the males would do was they'd rather date somebody on another plantation because they didn't want to stand there and watch their wives or their girlfriends being raped and beaten on a constant basis. If they jumped in, they would have got, that was life-threatening. They could not even watch it happen to their girlfriends or their wives. Well, they weren't considered wives. So you look at that. The man, it makes it look like the man abandoned the woman long time ago. So that's why I'm saying, you cannot come and walk in these shoes. You don't understand slavery. I understand slavery.
I do understand slavery.
Listen.
Well, can I answer? Can I interject? I mean, this is a dialogue, two-way conversation. I just want to get one point across. Okay, here's what I'm saying. I don't know if you knew this, but at the turn of the century, 97% of all black kids were born in a two-parent household at the turn of the century, 1900, in the Jim Crow era until 1910, over 90% of black kids were born in a two-parent household. So we were getting married at the turn of the century. We were having kids. We had functional families at the turn of the century. Hold on. The problem we had happened in the 1960s until now. That's where the wheels fell off. Because the black family was intact at the turn of the century. It was strong. It was prospering. All right? Problem happened much later. I can't pin all this on slavery. I'm sorry. I just can't pin all the problems we have right now on slavery. Something else happened to us that caused us to fall off.
You're saying us. I'm not talking about you as the male. I'm talking about women. This
we're the same. We are the same. The men and the women are the same. We're one unit.
No.
We are one unit.
No.
We are. The man and the women, we are one unit. There's no.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You have a right to. No, listen. Do not think that I'm saying this to you to say that you're not right. In your perspective, you're right. But I'm saying I only can talk about the woman. I can't talk about the male because I don't have a penis. So I don't know how you guys dealt with the stuff that you guys dealt with. But let me say this. I was born in the 60s, okay?
So was I.
My mom, we were born in New York. We were part of all of the 60s and the 70s stuff. We were part of that. We marched on Washington. We did all of that. Now, let me say this. Not every generation had the same privileges we had. Do you hear what I'm saying? Not every generation had the same privileges we had to be raised in families like we were raised in. Okay? So we can't separate them from us because we are all stolen women. We have to put it all together. Whether you believe this or not, you don't have to. Nobody wants to say slavery had nothing to do with the way the government is ran now. We don't want to say how businesses is being done to this day has nothing to do with slavery. But it has a lot. We just don't understand how. We don't understand. So it's easy for us to say, I don't see how that can happen. If you know how slavery was ran business-wise, economically-wise, you would see it's not far from what's going on right now to this day. Everybody wants to hold slavery over. Slavery is far from over. They just have a different way of doing it. That's all. Black women, and I'm speaking for myself. I'm a married woman.
Right.
My son's 59 years old. Listen to me. And I'm a veteran. I know what it is to be those women that they're talking about in this book. I've been there. I'm not a slave. but I've been there. I know I have ancestors. I live right now, I'm in Louisiana. Louisiana is the most racist place you can be. I can say that because I live here. Now, when it came to slavery, my grandmother, my grandfather, my grandparents, my great-grandmother, my aunties all lived in that era. I'm going by not only the book, but what they felt. They were not allowed to cry out. They were not allowed to say, you can't touch me. They were not allowed to say, stay away from me. My husband is going to protect me. Because she already knew her husband couldn't protect her simply because he would get killed or hung. So that has a lot to do how it is. The welfare system. Think about you're a black male. Think about the welfare system. What is it set up? Can the husband and wife be in the same house together in order for her to get welfare?
Can I talk now or what? Well, yeah. Are you letting me talk? Can I talk for a second?
Yeah.
Okay. For one thing, I think welfare is detrimental to us. I think that's one thing that tore up the black family was welfare.
Okay, so there you go.
Hold on. Let me speak now. Come on now. Let me have a dialogue, which means two. Monologue is when you talk and I listen, but dialogue is when we both talk. Okay? Yeah, let me talk a little bit, all right? Now, I think that welfare caused the black family to disintegrate. That's what brought us down. Not slavery, not Jim Crow, not these white boys. What destroyed the black family was welfare, Section 8, WIC program, school lunch program, food stamps, and feminism. That's what destroyed black families. It's going to destroy black women, too. You guys don't know this, but it's going to destroy you in the end. All right. Only way we're going to survive is when the black woman and the black man get together and work together to solve problems. That's what brought us through slavery, Jim Crow, and the civil rights struggle. Black man and women were hand in hand. We walked together. We marched together. Look at those old tapes. You see the black man and black woman together, walking together, united. We're not united because you keep saying you're separate. You're not separate. We're together. Black men belong to black women. Black women belong to black men. We are one unit. That's what you don't seem to get. We're one unit, all right? You keep going on with this black woman shit. You need to get with the black man. We need to work together. Quit trying to be separate and apart from us. That's what's holding you down. That's what's going to destroy you, okay? Get with the program. Get with black men, and we can work together, and we can go forward. If you want to keep on with this black woman shit, you guys are going to suffer, okay? You're going to suffer mightily like you're already suffering. It's going to get worse, all right?
So that's what you tell a rape victim. What you just said, that's what you tell a rape victim. I'm asking you a question. Is that what you tell a rape victim? Oh, he hung up. Okay, you guys, he hung up. He made his point. To him, he made his point, I guess. But I'm going to still say what I have to say. You didn't have to hang up because I wasn't finished. You said what you had to say, and I allowed you to do that, but you hung up. But okay, again, like I said, and I'm not changing, and I'm not disputing anything that Dr. Gail Elizabeth said. You can't be with nobody until you learn to be with yourself, first and foremost. There is no togetherness in anything until we as black women understand ourselves. And right now we're in a position where we're struggling with dealing with ourselves because of our past and our history, our ancestral history as women. I am not going to change that. My mind is not going to change. We cannot be as one unit until individually we learn to be with ourselves, which a lot of us have not learned to do. So I'm not running and being with anybody until I know I'm ready to do that. And right now, a lot of women who are with men are not ready. And they're going through hell. That is the point that needs to be made. We are going to hell because guess what? We haven't reclaimed ourselves yet. It has a lot to do with our history. It has a lot to do with our ancestry. It has a lot to do with it. We have to first learn and love ourselves, which in the past, in the past history, women have been stolen. Their very being has been stolen from them. and they're struggling, trying to make things work for them in spite of the ideal that back then the men walked away, turned their backs while things were being done to them, horrendous things being done to them. So why would I run to someone who I know will turn their back on me in my time of trouble? I have to work with myself. I have to learn and be resilient for me first and foremost before I call myself being one unit with someone else who, at the time, ran, turned their back on us. Every man has a right to his own perception of what the black woman is. But until, and I say that to any man, you walk in our shoes, somebody coming to you all the time, knocking on your door, pushing it open while you're sitting there with your family, grabbing you out and raping you on their own without your permission, putting their hands on you, you'll never understand. You'll never understand. There is no such thing as one unit until the main unit, which is a woman, is being repaired, reclaimed, and put back together. Hello?
Yeah, I just got here. Seems to me you're talking about stolen women. I presume that somehow society or men or maybe other women or some other entity, they're stealing your essence. Am I getting that at least somehow correct?
To a certain extent, but this is called Stolen Women, and it's by Dr. Gail Wyatt, and it's called Reclaiming Our Sexuality, Taking Back Our Lives. And if you didn't hear the first three parts of the book as I was discussing it and going through it, you probably wouldn't understand where I'm at now, which we're talking about the stereotypical way that people see us as women, black women.
Black women,
and that's
okay.
Where I'm at now. So,
would you consider white women as being part of this particular model, or would you are you just concentrating on black women?
Well, because we're talking slavery, I'm basically, the history, it starts about slavery, women, the
Okay. Often
African-American women had in slavery.
Right.
I made the point that the first thing an African-American slave, well, African slave, was introduced to was race. She was raped when she got off the ship, according to this book that I'm reading.
All right, when I got here, I heard you say that, I guess when you said men, I guess it's black men.
I was talking to a guy who had called in, and it was a male, that's why.
All right, but I'm going to assume that the men that you're talking about are going to be black men, because you said men were turning their backs on black women.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Was that in slavery or was that now?
No, that's what I'm trying to do is it was in slavery when they didn't want to see their girlfriends or their wives whipped, beaten, the whole nine yards, so they would kind of detach themselves from the situation. In order for them, because this was going on all the time, so they didn't want to date or have any relations with the women that were on the same plantation they were. Because if they would, they would be witness seeing all of this horrendous stuff happening to the females. You see, they would communicate and date on another plantation so that they can sleep at night. The males couldn't fight if they thought they got lynched, hanged, beaten the whole nine yards. So they would sit back in silence and couldn't do anything.
Oh, okay.
So that was the point I was trying to make when it came to the males.
It seems to me that the point you were trying to make was that you were trying to blame black men and white women. Because white women white men all the time.
No, it wasn't a blame game. I was explaining, according to the book, how the black male's position was dealt with her being whipped and beaten and raped on a constant basis, according to this book, and how he couldn't do anything for her. Or he couldn't protect her if he tried to he came to America as a slave was snatched away from him. That's what I'm trying to say, okay?
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
yeah, that's,
yeah.
That clarifies it, because about, what was it, about 6 months ago, 8 months ago, something like that, I didn't go on the show, but I was cruising Blog Talk Radio looking for a show to call in, and I heard I heard this this show, and it was about three or four black women, and they were talking about pretty much the same thing you were with regards to slavery, and they were blaming black men for allowing their women to be raped. And
no.
I'm thinking to myself, whoa, hold on a second there, you know.
There was a reason. You can't blame them, because there was a reason why. In order for him to stay in the family, he had to turn his back. Because
well, that's the
in
first
order
man,
for him to
yeah.
stay, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's the
for
first
him to stay
that,
alive,
mm-hmm.
if they beat and hang her,
yeah.
Well, who's going to take care of the kids? You
right.
see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, that's the first thing that popped in my mind. I don't understand, because many are getting blamed, white, black, Asian, Hispanic, and we're all getting blamed for everything. So I just wanted to find out. I just want to get some clarification. So,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
so all right. Well, thanks for the clarification. I'll let you get back to the show, and thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 202. 202?
I'm just listening now. I'm just listening.
Okay, you're just listening. Okay. All right. All right. Now, let's talk about the she-devil. The she-devil is a black woman who is basically evil. Walter Mosley referred to her as Dangerous Aura in the title of his novel, excuse me, Devil in a Blue Dress. And B.B. Moore Campbell described her perfectly in an article that she wrote for Essence magazine on some of my research on sexual stereotypes. Black women know her sister very well, skin tight, red dress, thigh high, back out, cleavage showing, bond wig, all askew. Hey, sugar, come and party with me. High round fanny, gum chewing, streetwise. Hey, baby, you want to party with me? We know her too well. She haunts us. We move far away from where she struts and breathe a sigh of relief. Then we turn on our television sets, and there she is again. The she-devil typifies all of the most negative characteristics attributed to African women before and during slavery. The immoral, conniving, seductress who loves sex anytime, anywhere, and will do anything to corrupt a man, disrupt his family, and take his money. If she can't find her man, she'll take another woman's man in a heartbeat and feel no remorse. This is one of the most pervasive images in American history. The assumption is that these women don't mind being sexual pets, exhibiting their bodies or using provocative body language to communicate their readiness for sex. Given their corrupt behavior, they deserved whatever they got. The she-devil still lives in the multitudes of prostitutes and loose black women who are portrayed on television, in the movies, in rap music, and in political rhetoric about pregnant black teens. While the mammy's image romanticizes the caretaking skills and trustworthy of black women, the she-devil was her polar opposite. Just as she was the best rationale for slavery, the sexual urges of Africans and their descendants had to be controlled. So, too, did she become the best revenge. There are a few advantages to emulating the she-devil image. To some women, being seen in a sexual light was preferable to not being seen at all. Being sexy can be empowering. The disadvantage of these images is that it depersonalizes a woman and overemphasizes her sexuality. It is often difficult to care about what happens to evil people or what makes them that way. The woman who models herself on the she-devil image might attract men's attention, but she inspires little empathy, tenderness, or desirability beyond the purely physical pleasures of the moment. Some black men have believed the myth of lustful black woman, of the lustful black woman. For example, here's an interview between an obviously curious white man and a freed black man in 1863. Question, have not colored women a good deal of passion? Answer, yes, sir. Are they carried by their passion to have intercourse with men? Yes, sir. But very few lawful married women are carried away if their husbands can take care of them. How is it with the young women? They are very wild and run around a great deal. Now, this is a conversation between a freed black man and a white man. And the freed black man is answering the questions that the white man is asking about the black woman. And the last question was, how is it with the young women? And the black man says they are very wild and run around a great deal. Okay. The most graphic illustration of pervasiveness of this stereotype is found in pornographic writings where fantasies of the she-devil are stoked like coals on a fire. In her book Against Pornography, The Evidence of Harm, Diana Russell quotes the following passage from the book Soul Slave by Rita Croft Cochran. Lance, he's a white man, looked down at me and said, "Get naked, nigger." And those words were like the greatest poetry in the world to me. It was like that man had dug down there in the deepest part of me and found something that was ultimately nigger, ultimate bitch, ultimate pain-loving whore. I am going to give you the fucking of your worthless nigger life. I had never felt more alive in my life, my worthless nigger life. One of them told me that I was a special nigger and that I could take more cock than any dozen Southern belles. I thought about that, and it gave me pride. There was little else that I could be proud of. Stereotypes of black women continue to romanticize slavery and oppression. To accept this image, a woman would have to have the self-esteem or self-worth of a sex slave. Now, as you can see, she said this because she felt worthless. The idea that a man was calling her nigger. Get naked, nigga. Man. And she felt alive inside. And he says to her, I'm going to give you the fucking of your worthless nigger life. And she says, I had never felt more alive in my life, my worthless nigger life. One of them, which is the white boy, told me that I was a special nigger, that I could take more cock than any dozen Southern belles. I thought about that, and it gave me pride. There was little else that I could be proud of. Man, that is something. That blew me away right there. Stereotypes of black women continue to romanticize slavery and oppression. To accept this image, a woman would have to have the self-esteem or self-worth of a sex slave, which we are not. But she had to feel something. She had no other choice. Because he made her, and it had been thrust in her mind and how she felt about herself, that this was the best it was going to get. And that's sad. And this is why I say what I say about us as women. How we have to change the mindset of those who have born in us this attitude toward ourselves. You guys, I want to thank both of my callers who called in. Thank you very much for calling in. I enjoyed the conversation. You guys, we're down to 3 minutes. This is through the eyes of the black woman on the Say Your Peace Radio Network. Didn't get a chance to play all my songs, but I'm fine with that. We come back Monday. We can continue this. I want to say thank you again. Stay tuned, and we're going to finish up on part 4 before we before we put the book down, because there's so much more, and I really, really appreciate the opinions and the perceptions of how others see us. I appreciate it. It just amazes me that we're so disconnected, and there's no sympathy for the black woman, and I just said that in here, how there's no sympathy for the black woman, none whatsoever, because this is what she expects, and it's not. We're much more than that. You know, people don't want to admit the black woman is the beginning when it comes to the mother of Earth itself. The African woman, period, is the mother. And because we're so misconstrued and we have this attitude and we have this way of thinking about us, it's amazing. And it just sometimes angers me on the perception even our own brothers have of us. But again, I want to say thank you, guys. Please, anytime, call in, talk to us. Great discussion. Great discussion. Thank you very much. You guys have a great night. This has been Through the Eyes of the Black Woman on the excuse me. Say Your Peace Radio Network. And I want to say bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida. We want to thank you for listening in and stay tuned.
Okay.